When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We're talking again
about body swapping.
Two boys, two white,
and back again.
Hi, I'm Paul Mitzi.
I'm Lucy Thomas.
I'm Brennan Levi.
And we are the Swapcast Podcast. Every episode, we watch an entry in the body swap movie genre and break it down for you. This week, we are watching the 1999 surrealist comedy Being John Malkovich, starring John Cusack, Cameron Diaz, Catherine Keener, and John Malkovich, where a depressed puppeteer discovers a hidden portal that allows him to enter and control the body of legendary actor John Malkovich. As always, we love to hear from our listeners, so slide into our DMs on Insta, send us an email, or chuck us a review on iTunes so we can get to 100 reviews and do an episode on Face Off already. So, on to Being John Malkovich. This is probably the most convoluted and strange means to a body swap that we have seen in any of the movies that we have done for the podcast. Is this film so out there as to not feel like an entry in the subgenre? Or are you comfortable with categorizing this as another body swap movie?
Lucy?
I am comfortable with putting it in there because it means we get to do it for the podcast, but it is like, it's unlike anything else in the world. I constantly was just writing down, how does this even, I can't even imagine like thinking, how do you come up with this idea?
And I would be 100% behind Lucy, like this film is totally a body swap, and just because it does it exceptionally well doesn't mean it should be taken out of the genre.
You take this away from us, I swear to God.
Yeah, I agree. Like, it definitely, especially as the film goes on, probably not to begin with, but where it ends up, it definitely belongs in the category of body swap. Mm. The inventiveness behind it, the creativity behind it, it does feel like a completely different beast than anything that we've looked at. You know, I'd say the only thing that would probably come close in the films that we've watched is maybe Your Name, in terms of taking the genre and breaking it down and then doing something completely unexpected with it. This film is really great. And I don't know, I mentioned it on the last episode. I watched it for the first time when it came out in 1999, and I think I was a bit too young for it back then, and I remember thinking, like, this is a bit strange, like, and not really connecting with it. But watching it now, I'm like, this is genius. I love this.
And also, like, being a young person and being like, what the fuck did they do to Cameron Diaz?
Yeah. But what a great Cameron Diaz performance.
Yeah, like, girlfriend, what, she can do it. Like, what, get out of retirement. Oh, I don't know. She's had kids or something. I'm not sure. But
I think she sells wine now.
She's so great.
She sells wine.
And she married a good Charlotte. I don't know, one of the good Charlottes.
That's the twins, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She married twins?
No, she married a good Charlotte. I don't know which one. Benji?
Because Hilary Duff was dating the other one, I'm pretty sure. Like, how amazing would that have been if they were, like, sisters-in-law? That's like another...
Hey, it's Nicole Richie is married to the other one.
Yeah, she stole him off of Hilary.
Yeah, but Nicole Richie and Cameron Diaz are actual sister-in-laws.
But fuck that. It could have been Cameron Diaz and Hilary Duff as sister-in-laws. Like, that's an alternate universe we could have been in.
Okay.
I want to see that film.
So last episode, you always have to do the plot properly, and it always just goes forever, and it's like impossible and terrible. And I said it should be a challenge that you have to do it in 30 seconds. I truly think we should start a clock and you should try and do it for this film.
Okay.
And right. that you should, like, every episode put, like, a ticking clock over the top. You have to do it in 30 seconds.
Okay. It's so like the new segment. Time already?
The new segment is, you know, 30 seconds with Paul.
Okay, right, I'm down.
I'll get a timer ready. I mean, I've sprung it on you, so you don't have to get it perfectly this time. But, okay, ready? Okay. Ready? 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so John Cusack is a sad puppeteer that can't get anywhere in his career. So he decides to get a job in an office building. The office that he works in is on the 7th and a half floor. He finds a portal in there, and when he goes through the portal, he can be in John Malkovich's mind. And then he decides to start having an affair with someone in the office, and then they start. No!
Okay, 30 you can work on it. You can work hard. On it. You can work on it for the next movie. But that's gonna be our new thing. I've decided.
Okay.
I don't really have any power in this podcast, and you're allowed to say no. I just thought that would be funny. And yeah, also just for this film in particular, it's fucking impossible.
Yes, this film is like, very complex. As I say, John Cusack, sad puppeteer. He's got a doting wife. And they live in a house full of animals, including a chimpanzee. And gets this job on the 7th and a half floor of this building. And because it's the 7th and a half floor, you have to do the emergency stop on the elevator and then use a crowbar to open it. And then all the ceilings are like really low, so you have to crouch down whenever you're walking around.
Yeah, alcohol safety nightmare.
Yeah, and just like that feeling of compression, it just comes through. Like you feel it as well. Like you feel all boxed in just watching it. It's so well done.
Very good visual metaphor for, working your 9-to-5 job. When he's doing his orientation video of seeing why the office building has a 7th and a half floor, which is a hilarious sequence. there's another woman in the room, played by Catherine Keener, who's like this femme fatale, and he is instantly obsessed with her. Then one day he's doing some filing and one of his files falls behind the cabinet, and behind the cabinet he finds a secret door, and when you go through the door there's a tunnel, and once you get to the end of the tunnel you are in John Malkovich's brain, so you can see what he sees and feel what he feels.
Now, at this point, I think we should just if it isn't already obvious, I think we should say spoilers from here on out. And if you haven't watched this film, you've got to watch this film. I think that's everyone's.
It's been out for a long time, so you're really behind if you haven't seen it.
But think about all the, 15-year-olds that are listening to this podcast.
Oh, no, youths. Yeah.
I'm glad I told them to recycle last week.
It's obviously an amazing experience to go in this tunnel and be inside of John Malkovich. And again, when I'm saying Malkovich, I mean the actor John Malkovich himself.
You're only in it for 15 minutes. You're only in him for 15 minutes, and then you fall out of the sky in New Jersey.
He goes and tells the femme fatale in the office about this, and she's like, yeah, we should start selling tickets to this. Everyone will love to do this.
I just feel like there's like so many good moments that we're skipping over, and I just want to keep butting into it. But I'll let you go.
I don't want to be doing the plot forever, so we'll just do the Cliff Notes version and then we can go into detail.
Yes, go for it.
So then he tells his wife at home about the portal, and she's like, I got to try this. She tries it once and is like, this is the most amazing experience of my life. It's also kind of tapped into something within me, and I think I might be trans. So she just wants to keep doing it. But then when she does it, next, she, the femme fatale from the office is on a date with John Malkovich that she's managed to secure. Through that, she falls in love with Cameron Diaz in John Malkovich's body because she can feel both of their presence.
It hurts my brain too, but yeah.
So she's like, I want to be in a relationship with you. but only if you stay in John Malkovich's head.
So then you cue some very weird sex scenes.
Yes. John Cusack, he cottons onto this, and then he decides to pretend to the femme fatale that Cameron Diaz is in the brain when he's actually in the brain, and he locks Cameron Diaz in a cage in their apartment so she can't get out. So then she then becomes attracted to John Cusack in John Malkovich's head. And then eventually wrangles it so that he can stay in the head, and they build a life together as John Cusack in John Malkovich. And
he makes him quit acting and start being a puppeteer.
But then Cameron Diaz, you know, gets out of the cage and then finds out that the office manager, he is actually behind the portal, and he has been traveling into John Malkovich's bloodline for hundreds of years so that he can never die. And he's planning to be the next person to go into John Malkovich and stay in there when John Malkovich turns 44, because that's when it has to happen. But this time he's going to take a whole bunch of other old people and Cameron Diaz so they can all live in John Malkovich together. So eventually it all comes to a head. They force John Cusack back out of the body. Then Catherine Keener, the femme fatale, and Cameron Diaz realize that they're just in love with each other. They stay with each other outside of John Malkovich. All the old people go into John Malkovich, take over. And then John Cusack finds the portal and goes into the baby that Catherine Keener and John Malkovich had together so that he can watch Catherine Keener for the rest of his life through the child. And that's the film. The totally normal, average, standard being John Malkovich.
I have so many questions and things I want to talk about. Who's going first?
You go first, Lisa.
Jump in.
Was this film created, written, mm-hmm. and it was always going to be Malkovich? Or did Charlie Kaufman write a script that was being blank line, and they had to find someone that would agree to do it? Or did they write the whole thing and then be like, John Malkovich, hey, I wrote this really weird thing. Would you be willing to be this person? Does anyone know the answer to that?
Yeah, I had the same thought when I was watching it. I was like, yeah.
So according to IMDb, Charlie Kaufman had no backup actors in mind to play themselves in the title role if John Malkovich couldn't appear in the film. And every time somebody offered to produce a film on the condition that a different actor be used, Kaufman adamantly refused, even when Malkovich himself made the offer.
Wow.
Wait, so it was always Malkovich, John Malkovich.
He wrote a script being John Malkovich. Yeah.
Yes, and then it had to be John Malkovich.
Isn't that the fucking weirdest thing? This movie's this movie's an acid trip, but it totally works. It's not fucking nonsensical. It's so weird. Yeah,
everything has a purpose. Everything has its place. Every little detail is worked out. And I can.
Yeah.
And even when you say that, when you think about it, John Malkovich is such a perfect vehicle for it.
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely, yes. Because it's not it's Brad Pitt or someone.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I can see.
But sidebar, Brad Pitt shows up in this, which I totally forgot about.
Yes.
Yeah, there is so many cameos in that last bit. Sean Penn.
What film has John Malkovich, Sean Penn, Andy Dick, Charlie Sheen, and Hanson? I can't think of any other.
And was Winona Ryder in there as well? I swear she was in that audience shot. I swear.
Maybe. I might have missed her. I definitely saw Andy Dick and Hanson in that audience
shot.
Yeah,
I saw Andy Dick and Hanson, yeah.
It's like Courtney Love and Marilyn Manson's what the hell?
Our second Hanson appearance in films we've done after Detention. So...
Love Wait, it. Are they in detention?
They're songs
they're
in detention.
They're songs detention, okay.
It is just such a singular film. And our last episode, we had our tenuous swap, and I watched True Stories on Brendan's recommendation. And that's another unique, crazy film. And this film is very much the same, but like I really like the plot and the humor really brought this to the next level for me.
So, but just with you saying that it's a singular film, I feel like Charlie Kaufman is like, he's trying to like nut out something like
he's constantly trying to figure something out in every film.
In this, and then you get, even though like Michelle Gondry made it, Eternal Sunshine. He's sort of like, he's like, I'm nearly there, and then like crawling out in bloody Synecdoche, New York, which is like, like, what the fuck is that? Yeah, but you can see he's really trying to like, there's these themes that for whatever reason, they like have a hold of him. It's really strange. He's such an odd guy.
Yeah, when you're in John Malkovich's brain, like when they're in the subconscious and they're like messing about, that very much felt like, Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah. And then is Adaptation him too? It is, isn't it? Yeah, so that's also similar, like that weird Nicolas Cage.
And then you have like the scene where Malkovich goes into his own mind and all he sees is Malkovich.
Yeah.
And that's so like that. Have you guys watched Anomalisa? Like,
no.
Yeah.
No, so like,
yeah, which the puppetry in this is so like reminiscent of that as well.
Yeah, that too, as well as the fact that everyone's face looks the same, just like an Anomalisa, like that. Everyone has the same face and voice, like, so it's just like these little parts that I'm like, oh man, like he must have like thought about that, and then a new movie came to mind, you know.
I just love that John Malkovich like fully just like dived into this movie in which Cameron Diaz describes him as a vagina. it's like he's a vagina because of the way you can like go into him. It's something else. Like if a writer contacted you, you'd be like, how are people going to perceive me doing this? Like, are people going to think I'm a real narcissist? Or
I think he just put his complete trust in this, because I mean like this film depicts like his child, like we see snippets of his childhood where he's watching his parents have sex, he's pissing himself in front of people, he's being tortured by
his sniffing panties, like
he's sniffing panties, he's on the couch with a girl calling him a pervert, like, you know, there's so many times we see in movies where actors play themselves and they're like playing like an exaggerated or like a villainized version of themselves, but I feel like this takes it to the next level where you know, he really would have had no, you know, he would have had complete trust to be able to do this to himself.
And it's funny that the all those early kind of Malkovich memories, which you don't know if they're real or not, they're all really sort of like vile or painful. And then in Eternal Sunshine, all those childhood memories that they go through are all like really sweet and romanticized. It's like two sides of this coin or whatever. I don't know. Yeah. Such a trip.
I think, you know, when we started this podcast, you know, one of the reasons I chose Body Swap Films to do a podcast about is because of the amount of, you know, subtext that can be in them and like the themes they can explore. But so many of the films that we do just explore the one thing over and over and over again. Like, what would it like? Do you have a different set of genitals, you know? And like, this is a film that truly, you know, takes advantage of what a body swap film can actually talk about.
It even says, like, this calls into question the nature of self and the existence of a soul. It's like, it actually really explores, you know, like on a deeper level other than just like, I have tits now or whatever, you know?
And like, it's amazing that it's taken this long for us to come across a movie that's actually outright said that.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone has Brenton ever said that.
Brenton and I have been saying, let's do this movie the whole time. You're the one that has, like, refused to let us. This was made in the 90s as well. It's been waiting for us. It's like, I'm over here, the best body swap movie.
But do you understand what it would have been like if we just started the podcast, we did Hot Chick, Freaky Friday, Being John Malkovich, all the good shit.
I know, and then it would be like agitator banter. I know what you like. I know it gets you off.
No, but we would literally just be doing fucking Sam for the rest of eternity because we've already gone through all the good shit.
Like, you gotta like mix them up. Okay, that's
we
fair,
gotta
that's
mix
fair.
Them up, or else this will literally be torture. We gotta have this good shit to look forward to. Like, as much as, you know, we're begging people to review us so we can do Face Off, like, you know, that's another thing we can look forward to at some point. Like, it's a good thing that we haven't done it yet. What I did appreciate this film, that it was willing to get quite dark, and the characters, you know, could be very unlikable. And John Cusack is a terrible character. Like, the character he plays is an awful person. And I, you know, I'd forgotten most of this film. Like, when it started, I'm like, is this our lead? Like, are we going to have to empathize with this piece of shit?
Yeah.
So I was quite happy when he essentially turned to, you know, it was basically his villain origin story. He turned into the villain by the end.
I just wanted to cut his hair and, like, scrub him so badly. He just so, like, grimy. It's horrible.
And then when he swapped into and started controlling John Malkovich's body,
he made him grimy.
Turned him into himself, like terrible haircut. And
disgusting.
So what did you think of John Malkovich as John Cusack? Do you think it was a solid swap performance?
Oh my
God.
Could
you see John Cusack coming through?
I feel like Brendan was saying, like, that thing of, like, you know, it's sort of ramping up to he did do this amazing progression of, you know, in the beginning he can sort of feel like, what just happened? Someone just said something, but it was me, but I didn't say that. And he has complete control over, like, how much he's turning the volume up on it. And then, you know, when his hair is all disgusting and he's all grimy, John Cusack, like, has fully taken over. It's like a different person. He does it so well. It's incredible.
Yeah, he's got the mannerisms. He's got, like, the walk, the swagger is lost. Yeah.
Yeah.
Performance that I kept thinking of as probably the closest we've come to this was Steve Martin in All of Me, in that, you know, that fight for
body back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
But like, the pitch perfect impersonation of who's going to be, like, taking over his body.
Yeah.
So, fantastic. It's John fucking Malkovich.
Yeah.
He's a great actor.
At the time, like, what did people think of this movie? Was it, like, revelatory, or did it, like, struggle, or?
No, this film was a hit straight away. Like, people got it.
Yeah.
It became a thing straight away, as it should have. And it launched, you know, this is a debut film, and obviously it launched his career.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It's amazing as well how, you know, you do have this total bombshell, Cameron Diaz, and they just made her look like shit the whole time, and she just went in on that, like, no worries. And maybe that she isn't someone, I don't know if you've ever, like, what other performances have you seen from her? Where, not that she's, like, not hot, but she plays, like, an odd sort of person, or, you know, he really gets the best out of, it's like in Adaptation as well, Nicolas Cage, like, he really gets these amazing performances out of unlikely places, I feel.
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, I don't think we've seen Cameron Diaz do this performance in another film.
No.
No.
And, you know, like, Catherine Keener is just so good as Maxine as
and
well.
And even that was just quite a departure for her, because she normally plays, like, I don't know, like, she's never, like, Maxine was a bitch. Like,
yeah, I mean, the other film I always think of with her is Hamlet 2, where she plays a complete bitch as
sure,
well.
Sure, I guess. But even that, it was played for laughs. This was like, she was like evil, sort of.
But I don't know. I feel like, what was it, Death to Smoochie as well? She has that character.
I haven't seen that. I feel like, for me, I just get this real, like, I think she's beautiful and sexy and all the rest.
Yeah.
Spoilers for later. But she's always like this really sort of nurturing, lovely,
like 40-year-old virgin.
Totally. And you know, she's the mum in Where the Wild Things Are, and this is just, she was a femme fatale. Like, it was, she played it perfectly.
Just shows her range, because I had the complete opposite, like, experience of her. Like, yeah, like all those films that we talked about.
Yeah,
like,
that's weird.
I see this as her, like, wheelhouse, like her like comedic timing, and just how well she does at this sort of character is like awesome as well. Like, Like, I loved Maxine in this, even though she is like, she's not even a villain. She's just someone who's confident in herself. Like, that's why she doesn't even care about going into John Malkovich's head. Like, she is already happy with who she is. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
And she's very open and honest with everyone. Like, John Cusack, she's like, I don't want to sleep with you. I don't find you attractive. But then when she does, she just says it. Like, I do. And she just says what she wants.
The same with Cameron Diaz. She's like, only as Malkovich. Like, she's like, no, I don't like you.
Whereas you have these like contrasting characters who are like in this relationship that should have been over ages ago. And it takes them going into someone else's body to like, take these steps. Whereas like, Cusack's character is like, you know, trying to cheat on the side, and then, you know, it's all just passive and stuff, whereas she's just like, no, I'm
up
who
and
I
down
am.
The line. Yeah, yeah, completely. Fully. Yeah.
I think this film is quite ahead of its time in terms of how willing it is to talk about lesbianism and trans issues and like exploring the trans experience through a body swap, which is something we haven't seen all that much. I mean, like Sam, our last episode, Sam, she
falls
wanted
into it.
She wanted to have a gender reassignment surgery just to get back to her original body. Whereas I feel that this is a lot more of a nuanced take. It kind of unlocks something in Cameron Diaz that she didn't realize was there, and kind of realized something herself by having this experience. So, yeah, I thought, I didn't expect to see that. And obviously, like, there are a couple of things that haven't aged well in terms of, like, some of the language that's used in this film probably wouldn't be used now. But I think it's quite progressive for the time.
Yeah. And I feel like they did do the trope of, it's like, oh, all of a sudden my body is different. You know, like, you get the normal dick, where's my dick? But Cameron Diaz was in that body and she loved it. She was like, that feels good. It was like, that was the first time. It was really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so refreshing, like, because, you know, usually we have the horror and the screaming.
Yes.
It was just like,
I've got a dick now. Woohoo.
Yeah. Yeah, like straight off the bat, she's just loving it.
Yeah, yeah.
Another film that this quite reminded me of that we've covered on the show before was Dave Made a Maze. I feel like this is the film that Dave Made a Maze was really trying to be. Did you see that comparison?
Yeah,
I can see what you mean. Mm. Yeah.
You know, the whole thing of like them going through the little door and it being like not knowing where you're going to go and it being really disorienting. And I did think of that as well.
But I feel like Dave Made a Maze wanted us to relate to the main character, whereas this film's like, actually, this main character's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Even though they were essentially the same character.
Hmm.
Like, yeah, I obviously like both films, but like, I'm not going to take any umbrage with, like, Charlie Kaufman is like my favorite writer. Like, as far as, anyone's like body of work, this guy, I guess, just seems to be hitting all the things I think about and stuff.
Just on a day-to-day level, is Charlie Kaufman okay? Like, it's like that, you know, it's like, you okay, hun? Like, is he, like, how can you have all these thoughts in your head and, like, be functioning and, like, making dinner and taking out the garbage? I just was like, how can you, do you know, like, what he's like? Does he have a family? Do you know what I mean? What do you know about him?
Yeah.
Like, he seems just like a really meek personality. Like, he and so many of these characters, and he says it himself, like, he's just writing honestly. And I think that's really how he is, like, okay, is because he's just like Maxine. He's just like, fuck it. This is when I'm a terrible person. This is the terrible person that I am when I'm a, you know. These
you
are the
say
things
he's
that
writing,
I worry about.
You say he's writing honestly. Like, there's no portal to John Malkovich's brain. Like,
but it's that. It's that. Yeah, yeah, sure. But it's like that ground, like those grounded characters in this craziness that we we're actually anchored to, like the actual humanity of what's going on in these films. Yeah. Like, I bet you he would, like, I haven't seen him talk about this or read anything about this film in particular, but 100% he'd be like, yeah, I'm John Cusack. Like, he would see himself in that sort of light. Like,
whoa.
You know what I mean? Like, But, like, I don't
know. At least he's self-aware enough to write himself as the villain.
Yeah, and to be like, I don't want to be that guy, and yeah, you know, I try not to, but I can see myself in John Cusack, and I could say the same thing. Like, I could be John Cusack. I try not to be. You know what I mean?
I'm the monkey. I don't know. I'm not in this movie.
I definitely appreciated the fact that they did put the monkey in this film. I love a good chimpanzee.
It had its own weird little
arc.
Own little weird narrative where you saw its life. Wasn't that bizarre? Also,
nothing's wasted in this
film. I'm going to tell you, was that a real monkey?
Yeah.
There is no fucking way I would do that. Chimps are so dangerous, Paul. There's no fucking way.
I want to hug one so bad.
It was beautiful. It was gorgeous. It would pull your face off if given the opportunity. Cameron Diaz deserves an Oscar for that. And like, for bravery. For being best bravery. There's no way.
One thing I have to say about this film that's probably, like, it is a comedy, but I think people don't focus on it enough, that this film is actually, like, laugh out loud funny. I think there's so many hilarious moments in this film. Like, through the darkness, there are some fantastic moments in this film. Like, did you guys find it successful as a comedy?
It's a very sneaky comedy, I feel. Like, it's like you have to be smart enough to understand the jokes.
On show, it's not little snide comment kind
of
stuff. And
it's really quiet, but it will be really funny. Yeah, totally, yeah. Totally.
The bit that probably made me laugh the most is when they go to see the manager, and he keeps talking about the receptionist. He's like, yeah, sorry about the cunt at reception. And he just keeps saying it. That bit, and when John Malkovich is waiting for Maxine to come for dinner, and the guy comes and talks about his favorite performance, and he uses language I can't repeat on the podcast, but he's talking about his brother. That bit was very funny. I don't know if they'd be able to do that joke nowadays, but I think it is a very clever joke, because I think the point is the language that was used. So
I was going to say, like, the whole assistant scene with her like not getting his name right and being like, I have no idea what you're saying. Like, keeps up. And then when he meets the boss, and the boss is like, I'm sorry about this speech impediment, and he's talking perfectly fine. Like, just all those beats, and that, like, that assistant is like completely aware of what she's doing, and she's like a horrible person. I love it. It was hilarious.
What did you guys think of Charlie Sheen as himself in this film? I totally forgot he was in this
film. Yeah, same here. I was like, it really blew my mind that it was him. It was crazy.
Yeah, are they like legit friends in real life? You know what I mean?
You'd hope. I don't think he'd be friends with John Malkovich. He's probably friends with Charlie Kaufman, I'm guessing.
Or that's Spike the connection?
Jones. Probably Spike Jones, I would say, would be the connection.
Okay.
It's really far out, wasn't it?
But I love, like, so the film is initially set in 1999, and then it's set 7 years later, and that's how they thought that
Charlie Sheen would age.
By 2006, he's already, like, completely bald and, like, fat.
White hair, yeah.
Little did they know he'd age horribly in a completely different way. So.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Should we get to hot or not?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Are they a toot or a boot? Are they ugly or cute? Tell me if they're hot or not.
Ding.
Ding.
Everyone
is beautiful in their own way. All right, so John Cusack as Craig Swartz, hot or not? Lucy. Oh,
that's a big not. Terrible dude, and he was so grimy. His hair was bad. He looked like he needed to brush his teeth like 100 times and just get all the grime off him. But I think John Cusack's a hottie with a body in real life. So I just want that. I want that out there.
Did the him being a puppeteer work for you or not?
Not. Give me him in High Fidelity, a really like emotionally immature record store owner. That's my bread and butter, ladies and gentlemen.
But an emotionally immature puppeteer, get out of here.
Yeah. He did begin the film by doing a sex puppet show in front of a child and not having like the brain power to stop doing that.
Yeah.
So,
he was in the moment. Yeah. He was there. He wasn't looking up at his audience.
I'm going to give him a not, even though like this era John Cusack outside of this film is 100% definite hot.
Yeah.
And I will
the transformation here is just so like I forgot it was John Cusack, and when I started watching it I was like, oh wait, that's John Cusack.
Yeah.
John Cusack will always get a permanent hot because he wrote a role in one of his films specifically for Hilary Duff, so I will always have a piece of my heart for him. So, yes. But sorry, John, you're not in this film.
Yeah.
Cameron Diaz as Lottie Schwartz.
Go, Brendan.
Lottie Schwartz.
Go straight white male.
I don't know why. Like, you guys are like they dress her down, but I feel like, first of all, if you put her outside today, she'd be a model. Like, she's got this big mop of hair. She's got like these hipster clothes. Like, I thought she would like fit right into today's fashion. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. She's definitely got that normcore look about her that I think, she would
She definitely still gets a hot. I feel like all she had to do really was like blow her hair back off her face, and it was like, there's that like angel's face. She like, she's very beautiful.
Like, I bet she was covered in like cat and dog fur and stuff. Like, the character that she plays.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I'd still give her a hot.
And also, like, she's, like, you know, a super fit chick. Like, she's, like, got muscles and they had to put her in those clothes because it would have made no sense for her character to look that way.
Or for John Cusack to cheat on her.
Yeah.
I'm going to give her a hot as well. I thought she, you can't hide that beauty. Plus, her character was, like, so sweet, and she loved animals. Yeah. And,
but don't get in a cage with a chimp. That's very dangerous.
Well, I don't think it was her choice.
Yeah, or still, no, I'm not going near monkeys. Sorry.
Catherine Keener as Maxine Lund.
Holy
dooly. I have to say, like, her fashion has aged very well. Mm. Like, all her outfits looked great still. She looked beautiful. She was, like, just exude sex.
Yeah.
So, definitely a hot for me.
Yeah, I don't think there's a real debate here. Like,
Except, like, I would have been afraid of her. She was really blunt. I fear people like that in real life. I feel like she'd look at me and be like, eyebrows. You know what I mean? Like, She'd just read you.
If I was a straight man, I don't think I would want to go near her. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd have the confidence to go near her, but as something on a screen, she's a hot. John Malkovich as John Horatio Malkovich.
This is so fraught. I don't know what to say. At the beginning.
Yes, we need to hear Lucy's take on
this. At the beginning, there is something about him, like, even like, you know, he's more of a character actor, I guess. He isn't Brad Pitt. Mm. But at the start, you know, his apartment is all clean, like his wallet and his key is laid out, and he's like very sharp. And there's just there's something about him. Yes, totally suave. So totally is a hot. But then it's just fast forward to, you know, an hour into the movie, and it's just like he's just like deteriorating. So, what does he get? Half a hot? I don't know.
No, there's no halves. You have to either give him a hot or not.
Well, then he's getting a hot. Yeah.
Brendan.
I'm with Lucy. Like, the dude, like, I think it's just that thing of like, he has a sophistication.
Yes.
That comes, and for him to also have that and then to play with that, like his own rep in this film, just like endears me to, more to him. So yeah, he gets a hot from me as well.
And plus he is so talented. He's so talented.
And the film like posits a universe where everybody wants to get inside of him, which kind of ups the attraction level. Like everyone's so obsessed with him, and like it's,
but
so
no one even knows what
him.
Who he is. Like
yeah,
like he's in that Jewel Thief movie, you know.
And definitely they had some like flashbacks to you know, his early 20s and that, and I think he could have got it. He could get it
completely.
He has an air.
Do they
about
ever
him.
Reference properly a film that he's in the whole
yeah,
movie?
No.
That, you know, even John Cusack's like, you know, he played that Jewel Thief even though he knows it's wrong. It's like he can't even say. He's like, he's one of the greatest actors of our time. He's like, he played that Jewel Thief one time. Like, even he doesn't know any of the movies. It's really funny.
Yeah, because that documentary we see afterwards, like, they showed, like, a screenshot from Dangerous Liaisons, but no one actually mentions it by name.
Yeah.
Let's get to Opinion Swap, where we find some interesting reviews of Being John Malkovich from across the interwebs. Now, this one was extremely hard, so this is going to be a very short segment today, because pretty much all the reviews on the internet is, this is a masterpiece, I love it, life-changing. So there's
Malkovich
not really anything.
Yeah.
There's nothing really that, mind-blowing here.
I'd love to hear some people who hate it. I'd just be genuinely interested in, like, where they're coming from. I know Katrina didn't like it.
At all.
Oh, did you watch it with her this time? And she just didn't like it at all? What was her reasoning? She could be the opinion swap this week.
Yeah, basically, she just thought it was weird and creepy.
But I think it is creepy, though. Like, I think that's the point. Mm. Like, ending,
totally.
Especially. How fucking disturbing a concept is that ending? Where he's obsessed with both Cameron Diaz and like Catherine Keener's characters, and is watching them through their daughter,
and he has no control.
Life.
He's like, look away, like he just has to. Yeah. He's just frozen. It's full on.
It's a terrifying I've talked about like being afraid of death or whatever, but I don't know. I feel like that could be worse.
Yeah. Okay, so this one's from Sophie on Letterboxd. She gives it 4 stars, and she says, you know you're fucked when you ask Charlie Sheen for advice. Very true. Very wise words, Sophie. And I feel like, that's definitely another thing that would never have happened if they made this film nowadays, is having Charlie Sheen in that role.
Right.
Okay, and this one is from Kayla on Letterboxd, and she gives it 4.5 stars and says, imagine how bad their house smelled with all those animals running around.
Yeah.
Ooh, dude.
For sure.
But that being said, I still want a chimp, so.
I'm never eat. That's so bad, Paul. Have you ever seen that thing of that woman's face that got pulled off? Like, or that Louis Theroux documentary? You should never have an animal like that as a pet. Boo!
I want one of those little monkeys like in Friends that sit on your shoulder and groom you.
Like,
I remember being in Kuala Lumpur, and like we were in the park, and there was some of those monkeys just like hanging out. We're like, oh cool, look at those monkeys, and then like they started to surround us, and then we were like, oh shit. And so we start to like walk off. Anytime we turned our back on them, they started running towards us.
Of course,
and
they did.
As soon as we like turned to look, they're like, stop. And we had to like back out of this park, like while constantly keeping our eyes. Like we had our backs to each other. Like it was a terrifying moment.
Yeah. I am like a vegetarian of like 16 years. I love animals, and I know that you need to leave them the fuck alone. Like, no.
But you know, you would totally take a bat to one if it was coming at you.
Oh, no.
All right, now it's time for our tenuous recommendations, where we each recommend a movie, TV show, song, album, or book that is connected to today's movie in some way. So, Brendan, you can start.
All of Charlie Kaufman's catalog. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right. No, I'll try a little harder.
Yeah.
Like, that's a bit of a... That's not even tenuous. So, you know, Let's try a little better, eh?
Yeah, it can be, you know.
And also, like, if you love Charlie Kaufman, you should, like, use this as an opportunity to...
Well, I'm pretty sure being John Malkovich is what I've already recommended on the show, so... Isn't it? I feel like that's on the list.
I think it is, yeah.
But no, I'm gonna do my job, you know. So, being John Malkovich, there's some syllables in that name.
This is so ripe. There's so much to mine here. It's so easy.
Yeah.
And you're still doing this bullshit. Okay, yeah, hit us.
Have you guys watched the film The Kid Detective?
No.
No, I want to, though.
Yeah. Isn't it weird, like, The Kid Detective being what John Malkovich have the exact same amount of syllables?
I wish.
So tenuous,
right? I wish, Paul, we could just go right now, just tit for tat, like, movies that had the same syllables, but my brain doesn't work that fast, but keep going.
It's okay. Hard. I don't think you would find any, because there's none. Anyway, also, this movie came out in 2020, and Being John Malkovich came out in 1999, so they sort of sound similar.
Being John Malkovich has one more syllable than The Kid Detective, by the way. I just counted it out.
Are you sure?
Being John Malkovich, the kid detective.
Who says being? You put an extra one there.
Being.
You went being. You went being. Like that.
No, sorry. Being John Malkovich.
Okay.
Being John Malkovich. Six. Oh, it is six. I miscounted.
You idiot.
Do you want me to start again?
No, continue. This is your recommendation now. It's just shit. But anyway, I'll find some other connection with it.
This
I'm
is
sure.
The one time I'll say my bad. Okay.
Okay.
But it is a really good movie, so I feel like it's worth moving on. So, The Kid Detective is a film that stars Adam Brody as a kid. He was a detective. Think like the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, that sort of thing. He was like solving crimes in his town, and the whole community knew who he was. They loved him. Until there was like the murder of this girl in the town, and they all look to him to solve it, and he never does. And for like his life, that's like the one case that's plagued him. And even though he stayed in the same town and nothing's changed, he's still a detective. It's like the one case that he never solved, and like just sort of keeps him in this like state of...
What genre is it? Is it like family or is it drama?
It definitely has drama elements in it. Like, yeah. it's a comedy drama mystery, because basically he's 32 now, and new evidence comes forth and a new case that he's trying to solve to sort of redeem himself.
And this sounds right up my alley. I want to watch it.
It's like this awesome tone shift of like this like quirky fun film, and then like this like seedy underbelly and
crime drama. Yeah. Cool.
The dramatic notes like hit you so hard, and like you actually like I like the ending. I'm like, oh wow, that's beautiful. So I highly recommend The Kid Detective.
How crazy is it that Adam Brody is playing a 32-year-old when he's 42?
Yeah, well.
I just find it weird that he's 42. He's aging very well, I think.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys were aware, but after being John Malkovich, Charlie Kaufman's next script that got produced was Hilary Duff's first film appearance. Did you guys realize?
Wait, for real?
This is
for real.
What is it called? Wild, or what is it called?
It's called Human Nature.
Human Nature, yeah.
Human Nature. So, yeah. Hilary Duff's in that.
Yeah, she plays young Patricia Arquette, and she has a hairy chest. So that was the first time Hilary Duff's ever been in a movie.
I thought she was like a Disney darling. Wasn't she any Disney films?
No, this was before. This was when she was even younger. This is pre Casper Meets Wendy. This was pre Lizzie McGuire.
I'm just laughing because you're like, your familiarity with her catalogue, that you know Casper, Wendy or whatever.
But anyway, so I think this is actually, you know, besides the fact that, you know, this started one of the most illustrious film careers of Hollywood history, this is also a great film outside of that. It's an underrated comedy.
I feel like it was wedged in between this and what?
Adaptation.
Yeah, so it got really overshadowed, but it is really good, isn't it?
Yeah, so this film stars Patricia Arquette, Reese Ifans, and Tim Robbins, and Peter Dinklage, who also a early role with him. And it's about a man that was raised by apes falling in love with a woman that has uncontrollable body hair that grows all over her body, and him being forced into like a science experiment, and it's all about nature versus nurture, and it's really funny and as strange as you'd expect anything from Charlie Kaufman to be.
Michelle Gondry direct it?
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Is it
like, when was the last time you watched it? Because I remember a lot of it, but probably as long ago as John Malkovich. Like, I need to
It's been a while, but I remember I've watched it a couple of times and I enjoyed it both times. I just feel like
it's Scott Hilary Duff in it. It's that's all he needs to know.
Yeah, that's all you need. Human Nature, give it a go. Lucy, what's yours?
Okay, so I'm doing a Spike Jonze directed documentary called Torrance Rises. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. No.
So it documents the journey, and it's like the behind the scenes, and then it documents the journey, and it's like, I'm in on this joke, and I don't know if you are, so I won't talk about it properly. For anyone, but it's anyone listening that understands, I know the joke, so don't call me stupid. Yeah, so it documents the journey of the dance group that were in the Praise You video for Fatboy Slim and how they get invited to perform at the MTV Music Awards. And, you know, they're just some amateur dance group that did that crazy dance in the mall to the Fatboy Slim song. And it's the documentary about that, Torrance Rises. Very funny.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. I think I heard something about it when it came out, but I never watched it.
Yeah, so his name, the choreographer's name is Richard Coffey. It's all centered around Richard Coffey.
Yeah, no, I'd be keen to watch that at some point, so that sounds good.
No, she'll recommend it to me.
But then I'll end up having to watch it anyway.
I think that, you know, the way however many years ago there were these great DVDs you could buy, the Michelle Gondry, the Spike Jonze, the Chris Cunningham that had all their crazy cool back catalog, like...
Yeah, those box sets.
Yeah, which probably still have it somewhere. I think Torrance Rises might have been on Spike Jonze as one of those. I think, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's a way to see it if it's not out there.
All right. So where are we ranking Being John Malkovich among the films we've watched for the podcast?
This is hard because, like, you know, the top of the list is your real, like, archetypal body swap movies. And because this doesn't feel like that, but it's such a great movie, it's hard to, you know?
Yeah, I feel like that's how I was like trying to do my list, but more and more I feel regret when I look down
and see
certain films. Yeah. So I'm going to start and I'm going to put him number one.
Ah.
Being John Malkovich is going to be my number one.
It's better than The Hot Chick. Yeah, I agree.
Sorry, Hot Chick, yeah.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, Heart and Souls, like, I do love a lot, but I am still going to put it above that. So, yeah.
All right. I am going to put it in the top five. I think it's going to be number four. So after...
He puts the Hot Chick.
Your Name, Freaky, The Hot Chick, and Being John Malkovich. Obviously, on a filmmaking level, they're leagues apart, but Hot Chick is just a film that just makes me feel so good when I watch it. Like, it's just a comfort movie. And this film is great, but
It's not a comfort movie deep. For sure.
It's too deep to be a comfort movie, so I have to put it below The Hot Chick. So yeah. It's in between The Hot Chick and Heart and Souls, so which is, I think, very good company.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm putting it after Heart and Souls and it before The Hot Chick. So my top five is Big, Heart and Souls, Being John Malkovich, The Hot Chick, and Your Name.
There we go.
Cool. You know, as much as we disagree about stuff, our top fives are pretty similar to each other.
Pretty consistent, yeah.
Yeah. Apart from Detention in Brendan's.
Yeah.
Lucy having Detention. It, like, near the bottom. Next episode. I think we truly need to go in the other direction, something a little bit less cerebral. So, I think it's time for us to return to the Shaggy Dog extended universe and do the 1976 sequel, The Shaggy DA, where a district attorney candidate finds himself transformed into a sheepdog.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what the hell? I've been revived a bit.
Yeah,
I'll do a few more episodes.
You can live a little longer. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just inane enough to be entertaining, so I'm looking forward to that one. Until then, I was Paul Mitzi, and you're a piece of shit if you don't review us on iTunes.
I was Lucy Thomas. Please accept my apology for what Paul just said.
And I was Brendan Levi. I hear that I don't have anything to say. Bye.
Bye.
See you, bye.
See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
The Swapcast podcast is recorded in Adelaide, Australia. It's hosted by Paul Mitzi and edited by Brendan Levi and Paul Mitzi. Our theme song was written and performed by John Marco of Two Creative, featuring Lucy Thomas, and recorded at Browntown Studios. Our music bumpers were created by Reggie Parker. Contact him on parkerregmusic@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.